Hello and welcome to The Interview. The COP27 climate conference reached a deal to support vulnerable countries in tackling loss and damage caused by climate change. But my guest today says that the UN summit in Sharm el-Sheikh failed to make enough progress to accelerate the green transition. Pascal Canfin has been one of the most outspoken voices on that transition as chair of the Environment Committee here at the European Parliament. He's an MEP from the centrist Renew Europe group, and he was a minister in the French government when François Hollande was president. He was also director of the French branch of the World Wildlife Fund from 2016 to 2019. Pascal Canfin, thank you so much for being my guest.
Thank you. Hello.
So let's start with this supposed breakthrough on loss and damages at the COP. If one looks at the small print, what they've actually agreed to do is to establish a committee to make recommendations on how to operationalize the new funding arrangements. It doesn't sound particularly impressive, actually.
Well, it is a breakthrough because so far, this, even limited, was not even possible and was not even an option, starting with the US. And I think the EU managed to bridge the gaps. And that's why we have this result. It's a limited one, but it's better than nothing.
A key thing is whether China is going to contribute, and island nations want that to happen.
Exactly. I mean, the core of the new element is twofold. First element is that the purpose of that fund is to help the most vulnerable countries that are the most impacted by the climate shocks, like the small islands in the Pacific, but also African countries, for instance. And the second element, which is rather interesting, is that we said as Europeans, okay, to have additional solidarity, additional finance, it's our responsibility to do so, but there is one condition. This condition is that we will not be the only one to do so, together with the US and Japan. China has to be on board and to be part of the donors community for that specific fund, which I think just reflects the reality of CO2 emissions today.
And speaking of CO2 emissions, so Europe did revise its targets. It's now gone up from 55% to 57% of carbon reduction by 2030. I spoke to a coalition of NGOs that says this is actually not enough to keep on the Paris 2015 target of 1.5 degrees of temperature rise, but you would argue that that's actually a lot compared to other commitments at COP27?
Well, first, we were among the only ones to upgrade the objectives. Moving from 55 to 57 might look like or sound like marginal, but just for you to know, this 2%, it's the total emissions of Austria or Portugal. So we moved ahead with the amount of emissions of one country, so it's not nothing. And we are among the only ones to do so. Nothing came additional from China. Nothing came additional from the US. So it's, you know, always good to blame the EU for not doing enough, but at least we do our part, probably a bit more than our part. And it would be good also for NGOs to look at what the others are doing.
Do you think that this dynamic is very hard to overcome now at these COPs where, you know, some countries push back on language related to fossil fuels and it's just going to be the same thing over and over again, and it's time for all countries to do things outside this UN framework?
Well, that's a key element. The COP is a UN negotiation ruled by unanimity. And we all know that when we have to have an unanimous agreement on phasing out fossil fuels, of course you have Saudi Arabia saying, no way, never. So it's blocked. And that's exactly what happened again in Sharm el-Sheikh. So that's why on top of the COP, not instead of the COP, but on top of the COP, we need to have, of course, other kind of actions. That's exactly what we do with the Green Deal in the EU. The Green Deal, we change more than 50 laws at the same time, starting, let's say, with one very visible one regarding cars. We decided a few weeks and months ago that over the next 13 years, we are going to move to 100% sale of zero emission cars, electric or other technologies, but zero emissions. 13 years to change the whole industry, which is the largest industry in Europe in terms of job. It's massive. Yeah. And as we are doing this move, California, then half of the US market, together with California, will have the very same standard, the very same objective. So we start moving things, but you do not negotiate that kind of things at the UN level. You just do it, you decide, you negotiate here in Strasbourg and Brussels, and then you do it.
Just a couple of follow-ups on the car, electric cars. I mean, on the question of where one gets materials for, it's been said that this move will actually make us less independent and more dependent on China for lithium and cobalt.
So if we just take a standard and we do not have any industrial strategy to accompany the standard, you're right. That's why, to avoid that trap, what we are doing is not only we take the standard, but at the same time, we negotiate a new rules that will be presented, I think it's in January, by Thierry Breton from the European Commission, on what we call a Critical Raw Material Act, that will precisely avoid us to fall into the trap, moving from one dependency on oil to Saudi Arabia and a few others to China. Second, we adopt a circular economy package. If it's circular, if, okay, we need lithium to make a battery, but then this battery remains in the EU because it is recycled and then reused, then we are not dependent on China anymore. And third, we take standards to improve the level of environmental performance of the batteries so that precisely we built a European-based industry for batteries, starting to less import from China or Korea. And the projections are that by 2025, so almost tomorrow morning, we will be the second largest producers of battery in the world. So it gives you a flavor of the scope of what we are doing when we put our energy all together as Europeans.
One thing I think we're forgetting is how society will take all of this. And you've admitted that going towards this green economy, it's not everyone obviously is going to be convinced by these changes. There's worries about job losses in the car industry.
Of course.
We had in France the yellow vest protests. You've written about the risk of splits in society.
Yep. How
do you persuade people? Because I saw, for example, on your Twitter feed, basically people saying, yeah, well, the usual elitist, technocratic Brussels rubbish, you know, this kind of thing.
Well, you know, if you call democracy with 27 member states agreeing plus European Parliament agreeing, I don't know what your expression was.
Technocratic
speak. It is not technocratic,
you know.
Brussels-based, blah, 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 blah. It's European democracy. This decision on cars was finally legally reconfirmed by the member states last week. 26 out of 27 countries supported this deal. Yeah. So it's not Brussels imposed. I mean,
right. That's
the rhetoric of populism. It's just not true. So now, back to what you said about the social acceptance of the transition. Obviously, it's a key element. And that's why, for instance, we are pushing a lot in the current negotiation on climate action to avoid to make a mistake that would be to tax people for climate when you are vulnerable households or where you have to use your car to go 50 kilometers back and forth to go to your to your work. It is unacceptable because there is no alternative. So as there is no alternative, then you just pay. And that is unacceptable. And it led in France to the yellow jackets. And I do everything I can tell you to avoid a scenario where we would split society because of that. And at the same time, I'm not fall into the trap of, let's say, the most conservative ones that would say, okay, it's too risky, let's do nothing. Because obviously we have to face the climate challenge, and the young generation is asking, rightly so, for more and more and more. So I try to strike the right balance,
a middle.
To move forward climate-wise at full speed, bringing and putting together all societies and all societal elements to avoid our societies to be split on this issue.
Thank you so much for being my guest, Pascal Canfin, head of the Environment Committee here at the European Parliament. And that wraps up this edition of the interview on France 24. Thank you so much for joining us.